A bottle floats on gently rippling water with a word in pink neon lighting inside. Arena.
Be interesting. I wonder what Caroline would think of all this.
I know, yeah.
She'll be laughing.
She will be laughing, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I need to do that again, do we? I didn't know what I was saying.
Ricky Tomlinson throws peanuts at Caroline.
Dad!
Comedy. I knew that if you strip it bare and just have funny characters, but with love in and everything, it would work.
Oh, please, Craig, shut up.
Because I always think too much happens in sitcoms. Because you know how people are funny, aren't they?
Sorry.
I think she had a passion to hold a mirror up to real people.
Craig Cash.
She'd be quite bemused and amused that we're all yapping about her. And she said, Cash, you'd never say anything nice about me when I was alive, did you?
Hello, I'm Mrs. Men. Nudity, filth, ladies' bosoms popping out from the cardigans. You won't be seeing any of that on this show.
If I wanted to go out that evening, I'd look in my black book and look, I see Caroline's name, and I go, if I go out with her, I know that I'll be laughing like a drain.
Scorchio.
She was a tremendous kid, honestly. She could have told me to climb Mount Everest and I'd have done it, you know.
What did you have?
Toad in the hole.
Ooh!
But we didn't have any sausages left, so we just had the hole.
Yeah.
She was a perfectionist. She was an artist, Caroline. There's no doubt about this.
Aww, you ain't no Who's that?
I always believed it was about love and respect, and I think that that's why people loved it.
Caroline Ahern.
She was just a normal within-shore girl at heart.
Yeah.
But being in the public eye was very difficult for her.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm just not very good at being a celebrity. I find all that really hard to deal with. Craig always says I'm like the female Gaza.
She was a very bright light that didn't shine for long enough.
I mean, when they kept saying, you big Hollywood actress. I didn't contradict them.
She was definitely unique, and she showed that clever, intelligent comedy can appeal to everyone.
Caroline Ahern, Queen of Comedy. An interview with Parkinson.
What gave you the first idea to do a spoof talk show? I mean, where did that start?
Well, I was doing loads of little characters and things, and I was doing Mrs. Merton as an agony aunt on the radio, and then Granada was saying they were giving six comedians their own half-hour show, and they said, what would you do if we gave you one? So I said, oh, I'd do Mrs. Merton's chat show, so that was how it happened, really.
Without further ado, let's bring on our first guest. She's come from the womb of one of history's most historic figures to be with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome the lovely face of Carol Thatcher?
Producer Peter Kessler.
We didn't even have a set for it. We literally just said, well, let's just put some sheets out and you know, I just put a couple of chairs there and we'll just do that.
So, Carol, you must think, you know, everybody only wants to talk about your mother. It's not going to be like that tonight, Carol. What's your father like?
You're going to come on to Mark as well?
No, I'll give him a miss.
In my view, she has never been funnier. She was never funnier on the Mrs. Merton show than on that one night. It was like genius. It was one of those moments where you go, a star is born.
Hands up if you in here tonight are a vegetarian. A lot of them are probably too weak to put their hands up. Tell me, what do you think of it all, this new fad?
What fad?
Somebody who's been listening tonight.
There was a warmth to everything she did. It was a love of that type of person.
Then they don't know it. They think they're in Countdown.
The sort of aunts and grannies who she knew, you know, coming around to visit when she was growing up.
What about your background now, going right the way back to the start of your career? You're born in Manchester. and an Irish background, Irish family.
Yeah.
And your mum seems to have played a great part in your life.
Yeah, she's brilliant, my mum. And she always used to love me doing little acts for her and turns for her when I was little. I'd only do them for her, you know, like when her friends had gone, I'd be impersonating them and stuff, and she'd love it. So it's all her fault.
And mum would always be up to sort of some sort of mischief. When I met her the very first time, Caroline said, listen, my mum and dad are in the other room and they're waiting to meet you. Maureen was like the Queen of Sheba and she had like a wraparound thing on and, you know, I had to kiss her hand when I came in and Bert had a tea towel round his head. And they were like, hello, hello. And I'm thinking, what the hell's going on here? And they say, you sit down. And when you sat down, it was a towel that was suspended between two chairs and you fell on the floor. And that was a great crack. And, you know, Caroline had come running in. He's fallen for the Queen of Sheba routine. Mischief was in her blood.
Our Patrick was born and they discovered he had cancer of the retina. So he had his eye removed when he was only 18 months old. And then mum was already pregnant with me and then they found out that when I was born that I had it as well. But I was really lucky because they saved my eyes. Mum used to tell us that we were special for having cancer. And we thought, God, aren't we brilliant with cancer? You know? So she kind of made us very strong.
Family photos, then a road sign for Withenshaw.
She grew up in Withenshaw, which she loved. Ah, Withenshaw. It's kind of rough and ready, but she loved it.
A teenage Caroline at a party dancing with a white-haired man.
The people were, you know, salt of the earth and full of characters, really, the place, and still is.
Houses with neat front gardens on a suburban estate. Caroline's friend, Sean Winterton, butters some bread.
I'm starving. This would be a perfect lunch for Caroline. Not roasting her or out like that, just toasty mad, honestly. Just mad on toasties. Oh, well, one can begin now. Caroline lived over the way with her mum and dad, Bert and Maureen, yeah. Good family, really. Met her out on the front, first time I ever met her. I don't know, we just hit it off.
As Denise, smoking in a wedding dress.
I think it's a good one. Missy, you miss her like mad. My relationship with Caroline, you're more like a sister here, that's how you talk to her. Mad on television. That telly was on 24-7. That was a life, really, the telly. So if you disturbed the telly, the door wasn't getting open.
I used to love Benny Hill. I used to absolutely love Benny Hill. I thought it was the funniest thing. And Dick Henry. All those sort of things when you're growing up. I loved comedy.
You are awful.
But I like you. I'd spend hours, days just watching telly, delighted. That's when I realised I wanted to do something with drama. So I went to Liverpool Poly. Then I got a massive overdraft when I was there. And so I came out and I was temping because I'd done secretarial as well. And then I got a week at the BBC in Manchester as a temp.
Oh, that's in the offices at the BBC, isn't it?
Yes, it looks like it, yes.
On Oxford Road?
Yes.
Oh, God.
That's when I first met her.
Yeah,
temping.
It is, isn't it? Oh.
I think it was 1987, yeah. I think it was. Wow. And, yeah, I mean, she hadn't really done anything on telly or anything
at that point.
She was just really, really funny. Yeah. And you could tell she had a real sort of comedy genius at that point even. She loved to play games and play tricks on people. And, she'd ring up some of the researchers and just say, oh, can you come in? And then she'd get Jonathan, who was, like, he was the youngest boy there. Yeah. and she'd get him to hide in the cupboard. And then when the researcher would come in, or the producer, she wasn't really fussy, she'd sort of say, oh, can you just, why are you standing there? Can you just get me something out of the cupboard? And they'd open the door and Jonathan would jump out and they'd get frightened to death, and she thought that was hilarious.
Oh,
which it was,
God.
Actually.
Well, I bet it was.
Yeah. It was just all about the fun, really. We just did a lot of playing about and laughing. I mean, she could type. She loved typing, so she could type. But, no, that wasn't what she wanted to do.
That's probably when she about started doing stand-up.
Yes, isn't it? She wasn't earning that great money at that time.
Just eat beans a lot, beans and toast, and that's all, really. She started doing stand-up while she was still working. She wanted her equity card for her to be on television, to be an actress. So you had to do a certain amount of hours doing something, performing. So then she thought she'd do stand-up. That'd be the easiest thing. However, that was really hard for her because she was so shy.
Put your hands together and welcome the fine comic talents of Carolina Hearn.
I got this car, right, you know, it's like a metro car. Well, it is a metro car. A metro, right? I've got this metro. And I was, like, driving it, right? And there was all this, like, rattling under the bonnet bit. So I thought, oh, and I'm not really that mechanically minded. So I took it to a garage and I said, you know, if you're a girl on your own, they always sort of rip you off. So I went, oh, hi, my brother is a car mechanic, but he's not well. I wanted to see if you could do stand-up without any actual jokes. Sometimes it was rubbish and sometimes it was really good. When I started, there was Steve Coogan, John Thompson, Henry Normal and me. There was like a little sort of circuit going and we'd all help each other. And I could get the same amount of money for 2 weeks' work as a secretary as I could for 20 minutes doing stand-up. And I thought, God, that's brilliant.
We were neighbours on Old Lansdowne Road. I lived in a bedsit studio flat and she lived just down the road, so we would meet on the circuit.
We hung around a lot together in Manchester. I saw a lot of her. She was funny, great company. She liked me, but I annoyed her as well. She sort of saw me as a working-class boy with intellectual pretensions. And didn't let me off the hook, you know, really sort of skewered me.
Because she used to tease Teddy Mick about you and your London friends, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, yeah, because I had two groups of friends. I had my Northern friends, and then I had my London friends, who also happened to be sort of Oxbridge-ish. Basically, I was a bit of a Northerner that had sold out. When I walked in one day on a hot day and I was wearing shorts, she looked at me and said, looked at me in my shorts, yeah. And said, looked at me and said, oh, that reminds me, I must get some chicken drumsticks on the way home, right? If I managed to make her laugh, I was delighted if I could make her laugh.
With Steve Coogan and John Thompson, curtains rise at a social club.
Young people didn't really get into comedy. Manchester and the North were still in the sort of grips of the dying gasps of working men's club comedy, which was very regressive.
This Aborigine from the backwoods, ooh, a right ugly bastard.
You know, misogynistic, racist comedy. The only venues I and Caroline could find were live music venues or these arts venues.
Pants as tight Lem Cece.
And thoughts as clear as beer, fight and sex.
I was the poet on the bill. I went on before her and read some serious poem about race or what have you, you know. That was not funny.
I'm proud, I'm black, and I love my culture, but I hate drinking wine with a liberal vulture.
I'm sorry to all the comedians that I ever did that to. The industry was very male. She was the only woman within the company of the Wolves. But she knew what she was doing, and she shone.
I'm just so nervous. I'm just trying this act out for a friend. She's too nervous to do it. But anyway, like,
But she was so naturally funny. That's the beauty of it. She had funny bones. But it was the nervousness of it that made it so brilliant, because she throws it away without pushing the punchline, it's a very, very clever way of doing it, because it's thrown away and then they're still laughing as she starts the next joke.
I was going to put some politics into my act, but I didn't bother. Anyway, right.
A few times she'd go and she was sort of paid, say, to do 15 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that, and we'd get there and say, right, time me, see how I do. And then she'd come off and she'd go, well, how was that? And I'd say, 8 minutes, but it's better than last time.
No, I just put that bit in for, like, some comedy and that. But anyway, oh, listen, thanks very much. I've had a lovely time. Bye.
You've got a very high IQ, haven't you, at school? You're, what,
yeah.
176?
Yeah, isn't it lovely?
That's genius level.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm delighted. Delighted about that.
Has it made a difference?
What?
Has it made a difference?
Well, it has, because I can't stop showing off about it.
1990. This is South Manchester's radio.
This is South Manchester's only 24-hour music station.
I'd been working at this radio station called KFM. They applied for presenters and Caroline came walking into the room with a big bag. I said, what the hell is in this? There'd be things like fake dog poo, big teeth that she'd put in just to make people laugh, and these glasses. Weird glasses that made her eyes look funny. Oh, do you know, she was just a complete and utter crackpot. Really is what she was. It was strange, because, like, within half an hour, I'd felt like I'd known her all my life.
On the very first day I met him, I went home and I wrote in my diary, I have just met the funniest man in the world.
We just laughed and laughed all day.
Craig and Caroline came as a pair. But, God, they were funny. They really were. I mean, I remember crying and laughing. Craig was funny and Caroline was funny. Caroline was a bit funnier than Craig.
Because the controller thought we were good together, we did, like, a Saturday morning show together.
Caroline, come here a sec. Did you not have a request to give to somebody earlier?
Oh, yeah, John Harrison. But I might have made that up, because I really can't remember. A man in a garage called Phil as well. He was lovely.
Caroline was never really a presenter. She was always much better in the comedy world than in the radio world, really.
The show was late at night, and she would literally be asleep with a... maybe a record going round. And I mean literally, what white noise.
She woke up after about 2 hours of being asleep, and the next day she was waiting for someone to make a complaint, but nobody complained. Like, no one noticed. That's how few people were listening to her.
Anyway, we're just doing this for a bit of a laugh, really, and then what we'll do, Caroline, is we'll probably... move on from KFM because...
Oh, I reckon big telly jobbies for us now. You know, like Richard Madeley and Judy Finnegan and everything. It's like we started off small on KFM.
Stepping stone.
Big jobbies.
We got sacked. So I said to Craig, well, I'll do that an act if you take me round in the car with half the money. So I entered this... to do a stand-up competition, and I won it and got £200, and Craig had helped me write. And I remember we got back to my house and we were throwing the money in the air. Do you know, we were doing car boot sales, everything, we had no money, and it was, God, it was absolutely brilliant. And then we spent the whole lot on drink.
I remember it as if it was yesterday. We danced and danced as the £10 notes tumbled around us, and we were so giddy and so excited, and no money since then ever felt as good as that.
She understood enough about what she did to know that it was good. And she also knew that her background empowered her and gave her a little superpower that, being from more privileged backgrounds, you did not have.
1992. the Granada TV buildings.
I was tasked to try and set up a Granada comedy division. It felt a little bit daunting until I sort of discovered this extraordinary range of talent.
Andy Harris claimed to have discovered Caroline, me and John.
Yeah.
And Caroline's joke was always, and she said this in front of Andy, was like, yeah, Andy Harris got a job at Granada Television and he came down to the studio where me, John and Steve were recording a TV show, and that's where he discovered it.
In front of dancing silhouettes, Steve flies in a bobble hat.
I needed to see what I could do to develop them. And one thing we obviously did was to do a pilot of a sketch show, which was called The Dead Good Show.
Weather watch. Well, the sun really did have its hat on today. Hip hip hooray, he's coming out to play locally. But it rained in London.
Around this time, she was doing sketch shows. She'd done The Dead Good Show and The Fast Show.
Nick, Keteros, Fosso, Tipia, Fitros, Weekend Meteorologicos, Met Paola.
Hello, Glassy Costa Paratos, Meteorology, Avali Portos, Scorchio. Minia Cunia Terra Interior, Scorchio.
Caroline was badgering me to think about doing more with Mrs. Burton.
Next week, euthanasia, is it just for foreigners? But sadly, we're out of time. Can I thank all my guests tonight?
We'd done a pilot for it and they commissioned a series, possibly two series, and that thrust Caroline into the limelight, really. It's a mixture of kind of excitement and fear. It was a proper job. Exciting times.
Hello, I'm Mrs. Merton, and welcome to the show.
It was just a fantastic idea that she herself at 23, 24 years old was playing an old lady in as a character.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Akabusi.
Being innocent and being not one bit innocent at the same time. It was a great vehicle for a chat show.
Unlike her husband, Paul Daniels, who's known for his cunning stunts, my next guest is known for her stunning costumes. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Debbie McGee. Oh, Debbie, you're very pleasing on the eye, if I might say. So I think Chris has realised that. Thank you. But what first, Debbie, attracted you to the millionaire Paul Daniels?
Chris Akabusi rolls about laughing on the sofa.
She was taking the piss out of famous people and, you know, kind of demolishing them. But I think Caroline did it with such delightful playfulness that everybody came on the show pretty much didn't take offence.
You know, you were a 60s sensation, weren't you? You know, all that marvellous football you played and then, of course, all the booze. But did you ever... did you ever think, if you hadn't done all that running around playing football, would you have been as thirsty?
George Best laughs.
The guests never knew what they were going to be asked. Therefore, Caroline had no idea how they were going to respond. Remember, right? Chris Eubank and... God, he was... That was a weird one.
What about the boy who beat you last time?
Statistically, he's obviously a better fighter than me.
Do you think so?
Statistically.
Were you as surprised as we all were when he came from behind and he licked you in the ring? Were you surprised? The thing about... Were you?
He stares.
Oh, come on, Chris. Chris Eubank, come on. It's a chat show.
She was so good. So bloody good, so quick on her feet.
Right.
And kind of reveling in it because she thought, well, he's not going to be punch me because I'm an old woman.
You do what comes to mind, which is to be belligerent, you know?
Yes. A lot of people watching, me and you know, a lot of people watching won't know what belligerent means. What exactly is belligerent in the inner city schools?
to be antagonistic.
Antagonistic. But I knew he wouldn't hate me. But you know, he's got the most flattest head you've ever seen. And you could actually get a tray of drinks on it. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Eubank. But actually, afterwards, he did ring up and asked if he could come back on, because I think he got it.
Andy Harris.
The irony was, much as she wanted to do it, she didn't really love performing to a live audience. That always made her nervous.
She involved her close family and then friends in as many things as she possibly could. Mrs. Merton Show, it's just full of next-door neighbours and her mum and her brothers. A sort of safety blanket, I guess.
We decided to open the show tonight with a conga!
Comedy's the hardest thing to do, so doing it week in, week out with people you know you can rely on to laugh at your jokes. Being kind to you, bring things to the show. That's again a stroke of genius.
What about this lady in the red? What would you like to ask?
We live quite close to you, Lord Litchfield, just about 2 miles down the road. Well, three if you count your front garden.
The crowd, they were important, weren't they?
Oh,
they were wonderful.
Brilliant characters, aren't they? People say, you know, did you write that stuff with them? And we're going, God, if we could write that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
They were just used to come out with it. They were brilliant.
A BBC building.
The BBC were desperate for more. It was a huge hit. Caroline, Craig and Henry had their office beside me. It was fantastic. If I ever was a bit fed up, I just have to go in their room and they'd cheer me up. They had this fairly absurd sort of routine. They never came in before 10:30. And most of the first hour or so was usually Caroline sort of nursing a bit of a hangover and putting Sopadine into water and then a lot of discussion about television.
I usually come in late and then Craig has a go at me for being late and I say, no, Craig was late the other week. This goes on for ages. And then Henry goes, now, come on, let's write comedy.
I was the grown-up and I used to type up the paper for her. So whenever you see her look down at the pad, I'd write that and I'd put some things in bold and some things in cap. I'm the only one who had a computer, you see. And if she didn't want to write, she'd just say, no, we're going shopping. Oh, I remember once she said, we're going to Granada Tours.
We'd go down Coronation Street set and you could go in the pub in the Rover's Return and they'd have a green screen opposite the stars of Coronation Street.
Do you want toast with
yes, me? Please.
Well done or half done.
Well done, well done. She loved to just have a crack and just have fun. It were very happy days then, very, very happy days. We'd mess about.
Thanks
very much, Caroline. And when the bigwigs from the BBC would come to see us, when they left, she'd open the window and shout down to them as they crossed the road, do a funny walk. And even the top sort of echelons of the BBC would do a funny walk over the road. She'd kill herself laughing. But that's how cheeky she was. Because you're supposed to treat the producer, as you know, with respect. But I think Caroline was more the boss.
With a brand new set, a brand new sofa, but the same old gormless faces.
In 1998, she welcomes Nigel Kennedy.
Horace, let me ask you, do you like classical music?
In small doses.
Every guest would have been discussed around the table.
Ladies and gentlemen, Melinda Messenger.
Caroline would have the ultimate decision.
It's Matthew Kelly.
But the Bernard Manning one was a difficult one, really. She wanted to challenge him and his thoughts and his beliefs.
You Japanese never fucking laugh, do you? Hey, you never laugh. Sat there, he can't wait to go home, make all the Datsun. You look a nice young fella, go and piss on that Jap.
He's got
the best comic timing in Britain, but I think he's the most awful, horrendous, racist man. I think the idea of sweeping it under the carpet and saying, we're not going to put it on television because we're politically correct, I think that it's still happening. He's really massive in the North West. Bernard Manning's club's full every night. To not show him on television because of that, I think show him on television and show that racism is so rife.
The Mrs. Merson Show, it's a comedy show, it's an entertainment show, and yes, you want to kind of, it's like you want to shadow box a little bit with people, but you know, you're there for a laugh. You know, when you're moving into racism, homophobia, kind of one of the strong themes, it's trickier to have the light touch and to keep the light touch, as particularly in a live situation.
I went to see him before we had him on the show. And I do remember him ending his performance with something that wasn't even a joke. He just said, keep your friends white, which was awful. So we'd reported to Caroline that this was the case.
The camera was still on Caroline while we waited for the lights to be set up and stuff. And she did this thing where she crossed herself just before Bernard was coming on. And I saw it, thought, aww.
Will you welcome old Big Mouth himself, Bernard Manning?
She must have been thinking, please God, I get through it, okay, please God, it's okay.
It's lovely to have you on.
Oh, it's lovely to be here.
It really is lovely to have you on.
Get on the racism kick and all that right away. I'm sexist and I don't like queers.
No, we'll save that.
Finding out that the audience found Bernard Manning's rather unpleasant sense of humour funny, I think that was quite a shock.
But you upset people, Bernard,
yes,
with your comedy.
Yes.
Now, what do you think of that?
It don't upset me, it upsets them.
Don't you feel bad that you upset people?
Oh, no. No. See, these people think they're English because they're born here. That means if a dog's born in a stable, it's a horse.
That is one titan who's been peddling racism to make his money. And she, as this little meek Mrs. Merson, in character, chose to speak to him on that seat.
But the thing about you is, Bernard, there's no getting away from it. You're a very good comedian, but...
Yes. Nice of you say that.
You are racist, aren't you, Bernard?
Yes.
To her credit, she braved it out. She really got to the heart of him, because he'd never really admitted that he was a racist. You know, you could clearly see what he was then.
Hands up in this audience. Who'd like Bernard more if he wasn't racist?
Me.
Let me just see.
There you
now
are.
That's a majority. You see, Bernard, we'd like you more if you weren't racist. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm not really racist. I tell jokes about everything.
Why don't you promise tonight that you'll never tell another racist joke?
Oh, yes.
Promise us all.
I couldn't do that.
No. Why not?
Because that's letting them off the hook. I tell gags about everybody and everything.
Well, do you know something, Bernard? I came to your club once, the Embassy.
Did you?
And, you know, I laughed.
Yes.
It was the night it burnt down, you know, the fire.
Stuck to her guns and said, and would get on at him about it.
Bernard, who do you vote for now Hitler's dead? We played roll out the barrel when you came on. We're scraping the barrel with you on.
You can see... It is the most like Caroline and the least like Mrs. Merton.
That was a heavyweight thing to do that most intellectuals couldn't do. They could articulate racism, etc., but they couldn't sit for however long that interview was with a person like Bernard Manning and get him to unpick himself.
Sorry, we just got to finish the ending.
That interview is like, this is the end of your kind of comedian, Bernard. We get it, but it's the end of it. We get it because you're here. And we have to face you. That was a radical thing to do that Caroline did.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you thank Bernard Manning and Richard Wilson?
She was way ahead of her game, way ahead of what people understood, what she was doing and what she was capable of, you know.
Back out the winner is, please.
And the winner is Caroline Ahern.
Top female comedy performer.
That was a treat.
She was a growing star, catapulted into the public eye. I was a press officer at Granada and looking after entertainment.
Mrs. Merton.
I was asked, could you keep an eye out for her? And we became firm friends very quickly. She was getting a lot of press intrusion.
She suffered terribly at the hands of the tabloids. They were always waiting for the next fall. Romantically, it never worked out for her, and that's a good story.
She did have quite a few boyfriends, didn't she, over the years?
Yeah.
However, it didn't really work out.
They just didn't work out, you know. They just didn't work out for a different, you know, different reasons.
For lots of different reasons, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, different reasons.
She would have loved to have children, but she chose not to because at the time they were saying that if a child was born, there would be a 50-50 chance that it would be born with cancer, being born with the retinoblastoma that she had.
Yeah. She would have never taken that risk.
No.
She carried a lot of sadness. I do think that. She did. And I think her life was difficult. It was difficult being in her head, I think.
There were some tough times for her, but I think what was always important with Caroline's work was it was always evolving. So Mrs. Merton was always going to have a limited life.
She wanted to do something else, you know. And I was like, bloody hell, we're doing all right here. Because we were skint, basically, before any of this. Just got a mortgage for the first time and I said to her, blimey, we're on the slow train out of poverty here and you're pulling the emergency card. But she was like, come on, Cassie, trust me, I trust you. She'd always say that, I trust you, so, you know, trust me.
We wanted to make a sitcom where it was that it was believable. People were sat around where they're just naturally funny, you know, because everybody knows people like that.
She had this fascination with ordinary people and what they say. She'd say, all the comedy you ever want in the world, you can walk around the supermarket and find it if you listen.
Morning, girl.
Hi, Claire, you're all right?
Fine, thank you. Good.
One of the biggest influences was a documentary called Three Salons at the Seaside.
Oh, don't she look horrendous? She looks like a chipmunk, doesn't she?
I mean, there was nothing the matter with her at first.
Oh, she was. She had wrinkles down her cheeks. They've gone away, but I'm sure they've done a mouth roller.
We watched it together time and time and time again, and the mundane conversations that they'd have, we would find funny.
The lady from the laundrette isn't back at work yet. She's had back trouble.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, well, we had a lot of changes there. Certainly have.
Thank you.
Just go upstairs and that was it. Anyway, let's hope it happens. Things that never happen again in our establishment. Be horrified.
So we kind of wanted to do something about our world, and Caroline was certain that it would work, it would travel.
I said, what's this? She said, This is what we're doing next. It's the royal family. I said, right. She said, now, I don't want any notes. I know you're going to say it's a bit short, but it's not, because we've written pause here and pause there, because that's where we're going to pause. OK, we're going to stop. It's all in real time, so don't you be mithering about it. Just read it normally. And then, at the same time, they gave me the cast list.
We read the first episode of The Royal Family to Andy Harris. And at the end, he said, he has a little high-pitched voice, Andy, we called him Squeak. He'd said, is that what you want to do, darlings? That's what you want to do? And we said, yeah. He said, I'll go and get you the money.
I had a bit of a problem with trying to sell this to the BBC. The head of comedy at the time was a guy called Geoffrey Perkins, who was a very nice guy, but, you know, something of a traditionalist, you know, Cambridge, and it said nothing, doesn't... No sitcom works without a live audience, no. We don't think it's going to work.
There was lots of doubt around it, and we felt down about it. Again, Caroline would be very resolute. Nobody's changing this.
The opening titles of The Royal Family. I would like to leave this city. Jim and Barbara sit down. Now, Barbara and Denise are on the sofa. Anthony and Jim laugh.
Acting on the telly was new to me. It was like, wow, you know, who could work in telly? And she'd be like, telly's full of people with more confidence than talent, and you've got talent. She gave me confidence.
Craig wells up.
Dad, stop fiddling with yourself.
I'm not fiddling with myself. Paid a quid for these underpants. Got 50 pence worth stuck up my arse.
Mam, tell him.
She's right. You're not picking your arse, you're picking your teeth.
Ralph Little.
It's a cliche, but it felt like a family almost from the get-go. It was very important to Caroline to foster an atmosphere of friendliness and collaboration and warmth. It was a show about a family that was sort of constantly ribbing each other and really affectionately sort of giving each other little digs, and that's basically what we were.
The script was brilliant. It was just blissful. It was so well written that it was a joy. You didn't really... just sort of came instinctively.
Help yourself to the buffet. Can I get you a ham sandwich?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm a vegetarian.
Ooh. Could you have some wafer-thin ham? Could she have wafer-thin ham, Barbara? No.
Caroline was in charge and she knew what she wanted, you know. I had a little soft spot for her. She was amazing. She was very, very clever, very, very talented.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I can't even remember what I'm supposed to be doing off my baby book. I'm supposed to be doing my breathing. I can't even remember how to breathe.
Come on. You'll be all right here. Let's play you a tape, eh?
Jim sits on the bathroom floor with an arm around Denise. He kisses her on the head.
It's wonderful when you get a good script. You can switch from something incredibly moving to something really funny.
Denise.
Yeah?
Are you definitely sure it wasn't just a great big piss, love?
No, I know it wasn't.
Quite often in the show, that you can't sit with that Caroline. There's a lot of things that set to music, and Caroline would had an earpiece in, so she's timing her performance brilliantly to the music.
How do you remember the first time your mum, when your mum put you in my arms and I looked at you? Oh God, you were beautiful, and I knew then. I'd do anything for you. Anything for you. And that, Anthony.
That was so real. I could feel her. Like she was trembling. Honestly, it was as though she was really having that baby, you know. And obviously that's something that never happened to her in her life. But it all came from there. It didn't come from there. It came from there.
wife, I could not let him out.
You'll be a wonderful mother.
Tears roll down their cheeks.
Dad, if Dave doesn't come back, will you come with me to the hospital?
Of course I will. I'll be right there, outside. But your mum will be inside with you.
You promise you will, Dad. You will stay with me.
Of course I'll stay with you. I'll always be there for you.
Yeah.
Always. Hey, Denise. I'm going to be a granddad.
He kisses her on the forehead. Through the sobs, Denise chuckles and wipes Jim's tears away. Andy Harris.
I don't think the BBC really understood quite what they had. But a very strange thing happened. It went out on BBC Two and the figures started to go up and up and up and up and up every week. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen very often.
1998. Producer Kenton Allen.
She'd moved down to London after the first series. We were writing in Soho. At that time in London, The Greta's got all sorts of reputations, but what it did have was an extraordinary collection of creative people.
We'd be like Tuesday night, start of the weekend. We'd be reveling with all sorts of different people.
All together in this weird safe space where you were with other famous-ish people that you could take the piss out of.
It was a giddy period for us, you know. She'd get a little compact mirror out, you know, for put a thing on and she'd be, like, spying round the room. Oh, that's it. Behind us. You know, whoever it bloody was, you know. We were supposed to be sort of acting like we belonged there. We never felt we did.
My main job of producing The Royal Family was to get them into the Groucho Club and out by 1 o'clock, so we start again the following morning.
Bloody hell. Kenton made sure we got home by 1 o'clock. He'd still be there. He'd be under the table. That would be like sending Colonel Saunders to look after the chickens, really. And the papers quickly picked up that she liked to drink. And, you know, she did. So we couldn't deny that one.
Friends die and cow.
I remember we'd all been out, everyone drinking, all the same, all drunk,
yeah, yeah.
And then coming out and journalists all there with loads of photographers.
The worst thing they did was they just hounded her all the time. She just didn't let her go, really.
I got kind of a reputation for being a big drinker before I was one. And we'd be going to the BAFTAs and we'd be so giddy. It's all free drink and we know we'd have a good few then. And then if we'd won by that time, I'd have had a load. So, but that was just sort of giddiness and excitement.
We are blessed with a brilliant, what we're blessed with. So we're blessed with something brilliant. Thanks a million. I think I said that before, didn't I? Thanks very, very much.
But because I'd stumbled on the speeches and things, I got a kind of reputation. And really, that time, I wasn't drinking absolutely loads.
Andy Harris.
It's difficult to deal with life once the tabloids, you know, decide that you are easy meat. And she became a source of great interest and amusement to the tabloids. And she really hated that.
I'm just not very good at being a celebrity. I find all that really hard to deal with.
Some of our unhappiness came to the surface when fame came along. She didn't quite know how to process it. Unless you have a thick skin, it can throw you off course and unsettle you.
She struggled with depression for a long time. The press intrusion can't have helped.
I just couldn't rid myself of this thing inside me that just made me want to cry all the time. I was just so low. And everyone knew it, and, you know, God love all my friends and my family were trying to help me out of it, but it just wouldn't go.
It was like the middle of the night. She was in London and I was in Manchester. I know I was in bed and the phone rang and she was saying goodbye, really. Sorry. But she just said, I love you and I'm sorry. And I'm going. I've taken an overdose. And I said, make yourself sick, make yourself sick, make yourself sick. I had to ring her mum and tell her mum. Her mum rang an ambulance. Luckily, they came and they sort of broke a door down and got her in time.
Maureen got a phone call, so obviously we rushed down there and we went into the flat and everything was, I don't know, it was strange, really. Because everything was all flapping about, you know, God, what she done this for and that.
Did she leave a note?
Yeah, she left three, one, Patrick, Maureen and myself. Maureen opened hers and obviously... Anyway, I just said, give me it. She said, what are you going to do with these now? I said, I'll tell you what I'll do with them. And I burnt them.
I was so drunk, I had no idea, and then the next day I was devastated that I could have done that. And it's so unlike me to, you know, go topping myself all the time. I mean, you know. And then I went into the Priory. I went in for depression, and then I'd been in there 2 days, and they said, oh, you have to be in for 4 weeks, and I was going to be making pots and clay modelling and all. That's what you do when you have a makeover. And then they came in and they said, oh no, you're not a depressive, you're an alcoholic. Come over here to this other bit with the alkies in. And that was awful. And then there was no clay modelling, you just have to go and watch videos of. Well, I mean, it's a brilliant place to go, the Priory, you know, I mean, no, you know, for that sort of thing. But it's not for a holiday. But, so, yeah, and I was saying I wasn't an alcoholic, and this went on for about 2 weeks, and they were saying, you are. And then I said, I am, and then they went, and then everyone clapped, so I was getting a bit giddy then. I went, oh, I'm a really big alcoholic. I was taken by it all.
I was like, bloody hell. You know, are you? They said, yeah, they said I am. And I said, well, you can't, I drink as much as you. You've not told them about me, have you? I was a bit shocked.
Everybody was saying that she was an alcoholic. She definitely did drink and get drunk because of the stresses and the challenges in her life. Turned out she had bipolar. So she moved back permanently to Manchester.
Yeah.
That was, and then she was back with her family, with her friends, where she was familiar.
2005. From above, terraced houses with a city skyline in the distance.
Caroline moved into this little bungalow in Timperley, and I thought she needs to be writing and working because it's therapy for her, really. So we said, we'll do a royal family, we'll do a one-off special. We were writing bits of scenes. She was saying, I'm not funny. But knew it was just the depression talking. And it came to a head when she said, you know, lads, I've lost all my confidence. I'm really sorry. I can't do it. I really can't do it anymore. We kept working on it without telling her. And like a month later, I took her the script and said, you know, what do you think of this? And she loved it. And it was like, you know, it was kind of upsetting me now thinking about it. She loved it, and it kind of ignited something in her again. And of course, then she said, oh, I see what you've done on that bit, but I don't like that bit. And, you know, as she would, I mean, she had to criticise it.
A photo of her giving two thumbs up.
Out of the blue, I get a call from Craig. And Craig simply said, Andy, you've got to get on a train and come up to see us. We've got a surprise for you. I said, a nice surprise. He said, oh, yes, you're going to be very happy.
The royal family, the Queen of Sheba. Jim's on a stairlift.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time.
And they said, well, we want to read it to you. So I said, great. So they read it to me.
Andy Harris gets emotional.
I just cried.
Oh, how was that little David doing at school?
Well, do you know how we thought he had attention deficit disorder?
Yeah.
But it turned out he just couldn't be bothered concentrating.
Oh.
Could he, Dave?
What?
Little David, not concentrating.
Oh, yeah, he's got attention deficit disorder, Barbara.
No, he's not, Dave. They told us that.
Oh, yeah, they did, yeah.
Who's been in the naughty chair?
Oh, you ain't, Nana.
Yeah. Who's that? Oh, hello, Denise.
Hey, Nana.
Are you awake, Nana?
Yeah.
Around this time, Caroline lost a grandma, Molly, who she's very close to.
Oh, there's with a granny.
Yeah. She loved her granny, didn't she?
Absolutely loved her granny.
I think with a granny, she says that a granny used to put her knickers on the line.
Yeah.
And when she did a washing, she'd put tea towels over them.
Yeah. Photos of Caroline and her granny.
She had an emotional investment. She was paying homage to a granny who she loved. So, therefore, that was projected onto Liz.
This was the moment. Mm-hmm. Not here, Luciana, my angel, he whispered. Let's wait until Marrakesh.
What the bloody hell is Dr. Curtis Sinclair playing at? I've got a little stiffy on here, and he wants to wait till Marrakesh.
David. David. What is a little stiffy?
It was such a return to form, you know. It was everything that she, you know, in that script for me. I really genuinely think it's a brilliant piece of writing. I do, and I think they performed it brilliantly.
I'm not a burden to you, am I, Barbara? Never a burden. I do love you, Barbara.
With curlers all over her head and Barbara's hand on her shoulder, Nana sways to music.
Everything revolved around the Nana in that episode. From the very start, you know, you recognise elements of their character in your own family, that when something happens like that, it touches you, like, on an emotional level, because you're laughing, you think, oh, no.
The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. Will we have rainbows day after day?
Barbara hugs her mum and they sway together.
Denise, how do you spell funeral?
Funeral?
Yes, spell it.
F-U-N...
Yeah, stop there. Because that's what I want my funeral to be. I want my funeral to be fun.
Oh, Nana.
And Denise, can we have volleyballs?
Yeah.
This wasn't a sort of, oh, something I've fallen at the bottom of a drawer. Well, let's do this and get a couple of bob. Will you ring up the BBC and see if we can do it? It was like the masterpiece. I really felt that. I felt that she wrote herself totally into that.
Do you remember, ma'am, you used to love a snake bite? What is it again? Is it half a cider and half a lager, or half a lager and half a cider?
In her dressing gown, Barbara stares at her mum.
Mum? Mum?
The family are rushing into a hospital.
It's such a delightful mix of pathos and celebration. So, you know, there's Nana, you know, finally dying, but at the same time, the last 3 or 4 minutes is everybody's dancing around with Ricky on the banjo. It's full of insight, of Caroline's mind.
What were her last words, Barbara? Trevor MacDonald.
Oh, Barbara. What a fitting tribute to the man.
Dad!
Jim puts Nana's ashes on top of the telly.
The Royal Family, Queen of Sheba.
I'd just like to dedicate this award to the memory of Molly Fallon, Caroline's Nana, who passed away last year, and the inspiration to this, and also to Maureen. Caroline can't be here tonight because her mum's not well. So to Maureen, Caroline and Molly, 3 generations of inspirational women. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Caroline was in a house, yeah, in her pyjamas, watching television, which was her favourite, yeah, thing to do. By that time, yeah, she was settled. Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, she was really content. That's the word I'd say.
Yeah.
Really content.
Yeah. The show ended up being more than just the show that won the BAFTA, and it was a show that helped her step towards happiness again, really. So what happened next felt very cruel.
At Macmillan Cancer Support.
But when I was in intensive care, you know, they wash you. And this nurse said, do you want to wash your own fairy?
After everything she'd been through already, she was then diagnosed with bladder cancer, which was a massive shock to us all.
The time she just shaved all her hair, her hair off, didn't she?
Yeah.
She just like, basically, we didn't know she'd
done
it.
Oh, my gosh, no.
And she basically, you know, we opened the door and she was just there with no hair.
I screamed, it was such a shock, but she was laughing her head off.
Laughing her head off, you know.
And in some ways, she sort of made it easier because she never complained, did she, Di? She never moaned. And I think she probably did that on purpose, you know, making things easy for other people to deal with as well.
Yeah.
But, I was going to have all these in order, but right at last minute, I couldn't be bothered.
2014, Craig Cash.
She fought the bladder cancer and, well, she thought she'd won. But then, sledgehammer, it came back and developed into lung cancer.
If she texts at all, it was always hysterical about when she lost her. I don't know, nobody told me my ears stuck out. And I mean, just self-depreciating jokes to make us feel better about her demise. You know, that's her generosity, that's what she gave back.
I remember we got a call, she'd found out that she only had 2 months to live, and the doctor told her she was on her own. But she'd said to me, just tell me. And then, she was just heartbroken because it was just too much. 2 months is nothing, really.
I mean, I was just in denial. I just kept saying no, just kept repeating no for some, you know. But there's a lot to be said for denial. And she was like, we had some laughs, though, didn't we, Cashy? Sorry.
Craig gets up, full of emotion.
All she wanted to do was go to Costa Coffee.
Yeah.
And my daughter Abby had bought her a voucher for Costa Coffee, and she wrote to us saying, I want you to go with her, Auntie Callie and my mum, to Costa Coffee. Mm-hmm. And we actually made it, didn't we?
Yes. That was about 2 weeks before she passed.
Yeah.
And we took photos in there.
Yeah,
and she was having a laugh with the staff and everything.
Yeah. We had a couple of lattes each. And I'd taken three crunchies. Caroline had about an inch of her crunchy, if that. But we laughed the whole time.
Co-writer Carmel hugging Caroline.
She'd have you doing all sorts. Even when she was dying, really, in hospital, and she would say, do a funny walk, will you, when you get here? I'll be looking for you. So I walked past the hospital window doing a fantastic big John Cleese-esque funny walk on the way in, laughing to myself, amusing myself with everybody looking. And when I got in the room, it wasn't Caroline, they'd moved her, and
It was just a poorly old woman and her family.
I was mortified. And when I asked where Caroline was, I went in the room and said, where are you? And now I've just done a funny walk. And I was like furious. You made a fool out of me again. But she laughed and laughed and laughed.
A news bulletin comes on a TV that's next to photos of Caroline with family and friends.
And we start with the sad news that's just broke in the last hour or so, that the actress and scriptwriter Caroline Ahern has died. She was 52 years old. The star revealed in 2014 that she was being treated for lung cancer.
I just think a testament to her was her funeral. It was packed.
It was a great tribute to Caroline. Mm. They brought the coffin into I Would Like to Leave This City.
Yeah. I would like to leave this Most of the crew turned up. Some of them had travelled up from London. She was loved. She was absolutely loved.
Yeah.
You can't get better than that.
There were a lot of Royal Mancunians crying that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she liked crying a lot. Not quite as much as Olivia Colman.
It was rough.
Did you manage to make it to her funeral?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean...
Steve Coogan.
Yeah. I think she'd been delighted to see Stephen Coogan crying his eyes out. I think that would have made her laugh. She would be appalled at the potential in the interview I've just given you. She'd go, oh, look at you trying to be all like that. You know, like...
Out, we could talk to you for another minute at least. Oh, they did laugh. What did they do, Roy?
They did laugh.
You see?
It's very hard to think of anybody before or since that I've worked with that had quite had her ability to capture the human condition and celebrate it and be so joyous about it.
The stuff of life was the stuff of comedy for her. Maybe what made her so alive, so creative, is the fact that she was a free spirit.
You don't get many Carolines to the dozen, do you? I think I've only met one in the whole of my career. She will be numero uno, I think, as far as what she brought to my life and what she brought to other people's lives.
On a park notice board at home, she had a little quote that she'd ripped out of a newspaper, and it was by W.H. Auden, and it was, amongst those whom I like or admire, I can find no common denominator, but amongst those whom I love, I can. All of them make me laugh. And I thought that said so much about her. But ironically, nobody made us laugh more than her.
Jim!
Sorry, cut.
Oh, you're laughing. There
I
you
went
go.
Long.
Was that it?
That's it, thank you.
Caroline Ahern, 1963 to 2016.
It
There's more from Mrs. Merton and the Royal Family. Press red for our classic comedy collection on BBC iPlayer. Well, next, more from Caroline on the Fast Show Christmas special.